Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of
Hi, I'm Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is June 14, 2010, and you're listening to another show of Who's Reading the Organon, show number 29. We'll be reading and reviewing aphorism number 84 and going into a little depth with that. Also, we will continue on with aphorism 85. I want to extend our thanks to all those professional homeopaths and interested persons who have been listening to our radio show. This is enrichment to our knowledge and understanding of the application and theory of homeopathy. We've been picking up steam the last week with 2,273 profile views, and 1,409 people have listened to our shows, mostly by the archived downloads, which are so convenient, and others have listened live on air. The word is getting out, and this has happened all over the course of just 6 weeks' time. We're always happy to see people on the Homeopathy World Community Network live on the live chat so that we can announce comments over the air. And as follow-up, you can always have a conversation on the BTR World, Who's Reading the Organon group right there in the HWC network. I especially would like to thank Vera for doing the show with me. I believe we've hit a tipping point, and like I said, the word is getting out. Many people are doing the downloads and listening for their own pleasure and entertainment and education. I was thinking maybe people are even putting them onto a CD and driving in their car while learning with us.
Good to see them doing that.
Wouldn't that probably be fantastic?
Probably be some car crashes.
Please.
What's they're saying that?
Well, let's think on the positive note. So to create and produce this show, you know, Vera and I, it takes a lot of energy, effort, caring, and thought. And I do appreciate Vera's flexibility in scheduling and recording. She does a lot of work up front in posting to the Blog Talk Radio website and also onto the Homeopathy World Community group page. Vera also challenges me to learn more each time we meet. That's why this is a study buddy group together.
Well,
and
I just enjoy the studying together, Debbie, because it's a certain regularity between us. The fact that we're broadcasting it is just
icing on the cake.
Exactly.
Well, a show like this is based upon trust and faith and consistency. Just like you said, that regularity. I'm very thankful to have found you, Vera, on HWC, and I encourage everyone to start talking to other people on the network. You never know what you can discover and what can come of it. As a special treat, Vera will be starting her own radio show with Gary Weaver called Homeopathy Unplugged, and they will continue with educational programming. Homeopathy will be taught as by Hahnemann and Boninghausen, and viewed through the Organon, proving symptoms, the Materia Medica, and repertories in general, as well as the Boninghausen's therapeutic pocketbook. The show is going to air in just a few days on Thursday, June 17th, at, you say, 1300 hour Eastern Time U.S. I think that would be 1 p.m.
Right.
Is that correct?
Right. That's 1 p.m. It's just half an hour after this radio show ends.
Well, you're going to be busy.
Absolutely.
How often will your show be broadcast?
Well, we're kind of aiming for once a week, but probably what will happen is we'll try to rebroadcast the same show at different times of day and encourage people to download the archives. But in the meantime, we're starting with this one, and it's a very interesting interview between Gary and Ken Doran, an Australian homeopath. And I think it's well worth a listen. I certainly learned a lot from it.
Well, we're encouraging people to join in on that, and congratulations on starting something new. We're going to do some of our fantastic Twitter inspirations, because I just love them, and it's group energy. So this one comes from someone called Walking Will, and he's quoting Bertrand Russell. He says, "The time you enjoy wasting is not wasted time." And I love wasting time. I enjoy wasting time often. So now I'm thinking of it in a positive light, because you have to live, you have to enjoy your life sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is something from Lifelong Health, who quotes Frank Tiger. He says, "Be a good listener. Your ears will never get you in trouble." And I take this one to heart. It's a very potent message. It really goes perfectly well with aphorism number 84, which we had just read last week and will review again, how the homeopath is a good listener, and the fact that you don't open your mouth, that's how you don't get in trouble.
Although, are we ready to move to aphorism 84? Because that's exactly the point I wanted to talk about.
If you would give me a few minutes,
okay.
We're just got two more cool inspirational things. This one's from somebody called Susan Boyle's cat. And everybody who knows Susan Boyle from American Idol, is that one? Is that it?
I think it's the British version.
It's the British version?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Susan Boyle's, she was a singer. So this is what she quotes from Nelson Mandela. "There is nothing like returning to a place that remains unchanged to find the ways in which you yourself have altered." Wow. Wow. This is really going to be good for today's show. We're going to see how it fits in. And just a little bit more icing on our cake. This is from Enmotivate, and this person quotes Peter Davies. "Motivation is like food for the brain. You cannot get enough in one sitting. It needs continual and regular top-ups." Okay. Well, I've given enough motivation and food for the brain to last all day and maybe the rest of the week. So I'm ready to go with you.
Okay. The point that you were making about listening, I just want to go back to 84 and to the to where Hahnemann says, "Keeping silence himself, he allows them to say all they have to say and refrains from interrupting them unless they wander off to other matters." Now, that
keeping silence unless they wander off, to other matters. And so this is something that we need to pay attention to.
But the thing is, the point that I want to make is that part of the art of case-taking is knowing when something is extraneous, because you can find yourself being very involved in a long story about someone's mother-in-law's cat, and it's not relevant, and you're not sure, do I let them ramble so that I don't destroy the rapport, or do I focus sharply? And part of the art is knowing when to speak and when to gently direct your patient to stay on the point. Some people are very hesitant to ever interrupt the patient because they're scared they'll miss something important and case taking lasts 4 hours.
Right. And so we don't need for it to last for 4 hours if we can see where the energy is resonating and ask them to just move further into that information.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we never know if that little side trip the person takes is going to give us a very important clue.
Well,
so how do you know?
Well, one aphorism that I'd like to hop to, although it's not on our list to do now, but to refer to it even before we continue with 85, is going back to aphorism 6, which is one that we haven't covered in this particular show, and it's part of the drawback of hopping around in the organ on the way I am. The next section we will be going from the beginning. In aphorism 6, Hahnemann instructs us, I won't read the entire aphorism now, but Hahnemann instructs us that we should pay attention only to the deviations from the former healthy state of the now diseased individual. So it means if your patient is sitting there and is feeling miserable, you want to know, did you always feel this way? If the answer is yes, then that's not where your focus is going to be at that moment. If your patient said, no, I started feeling this way after I got flu 2 weeks ago, then you're going to need to take that. So it helps you focus when you look at what has changed and then set a timeline between where things are now, how they were before, and how they were before that. So you start seeing blocks of changed symptoms from the original state.
Okay, so yes. This reminds me of a key thought that a homeopath uses called never well since.
Mm-hmm.
Because you gave the illustration of having a flu, and at that point there was a change.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, at what point do we look at this change? In other words, if a person comes in and says, as a child, I was always happy, I was made lots of friends, I danced, and all this other great stuff, but then they say in high school, that all changed.
Mm-hmm.
Or today, that at what point do we know or refer back as the point of change?
From my understanding, you need to start from the present. And it's interesting because at one point I used to teach history. I taught international history. I liked working backwards with students instead of forwards because today we know best, usually. Today we know best. Yesterday, a little less. The day before, a little less. We look at the presenting symptoms because these are the clearest. These are the most apparent. We see, when did you change to get this symptom?
Uh-huh.
See, and you start working with what's presenting to you at the time. And that will give you a much more sharply focused picture of what you're dealing with right now. The remedies in their own way will work backwards. You'll find yourself moving backwards as previous situations come up, as what very happens when we give a remedy is we get the return of old symptoms.
Okay.
Hopefully in a very transient, easy to deal with way. And at that stage, that will be the deviation from the normal healthy state, and you'll be working with that. And this is all part of case management, when instead of trying to go back to the person's roots and build up from there, which is a bit like trying to learn history from prehistoric history going forwards, when there are so many gaps and lack of clarities and missing links and what have you. Whereas when you start in the present and move back, you can follow a chain, and the chain is often very clear. It's an interesting approach. And it's very simple, because when you're focusing on what has changed, you have a cold now. You didn't have a cold before. Right, I'm going to take the cold. It's a common symptom of a cold, but that's what's going on now, and that's what the patient comes to you for. So I found very often in the past the whole issue of a patient would come with headaches, and they would also be quite unhappy and irritable. And if they finish the treatment and they're happier and less irritable and they still have the headaches, they will feel that they weren't treated, and they would be right.
It seems as if through this particular discussion with aphorism number 6, noting what has changed, we've hit upon quite a few other principles that we use, one being the never-well sins, another one, Herring's Law, which is working backward in history, and another one being if it's something that's in the present that seems to be very active and highly focused in what the symptoms are, is in an acute case, meaning this is happening right now at the present, it needs to be handled immediately, and then to chronic. So there's three things happening just in this one discussion, which is great because we're seeing how the principles come into play in case management.
Just as a very brief sidetrack, but I invite any of the listeners who have more knowledge about Herring's Law, or as many have pointed out, the law that is attributed to Herring, but Herring apparently did not state. Anyone who has more knowledge or information and would like to contribute to the board or the forum or a discussion and share the knowledge, that would be really great. Because I don't want to go into it here, but I know that there are others out there somewhere who will have lots to say on the subject. Anyway, we can continue. I just wanted to bring out aphorism 6 before we go towards aphorism 86, where Hanuman is saying what we should ask. So let's just do 85 now.
Okay.
He begins a fresh line with every new circumstance mentioned by the patient or his friends, so that the symptoms shall all be ranged separately, one below the other. He can thus add to any one that may at first have been related in too vague a manner, but subsequently more explicitly explained. Now here what I find interesting is the importance of taking a case and writing out that case clearly, because I think I mentioned in previous shows, I've been to homeopaths who basically draw arrows all over the place and scribbled words here and there, and you don't really see a case taking. Sometimes there's a sense of, I don't need to take the case because I can repertorize it in my head. Sometimes there's a sense of, this is far too much to write anyway. And it seems to me part of what Hanuman is doing is he's setting out good practice. And good practice means you take a case and you write it down clearly. But he's also setting a practice which will allow cases to be examined afterwards by other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to me, it's a very clear-cut information. So as if you were in a class learning penmanship. This is the way you hold the pen. This is the way you form the letters. And for the homeopath learning, this is the way you place the information on the paper, on the page. And today, most of us, or quite a few, are using the computer, and I do type my notes. As a matter of fact, not only do I type my notes, I keep a blank sheet of paper next to my computer, and I will write out different aspects of the case on the page with a pen or pencil.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of doing both at the same time. And this helps to organize the information that's being taken in.
Mm-hmm. I find when I was studying, I was encouraged to do case taking with three columns, two side column and a main central column. I use the left column to state the system where the symptom is, the central column to describe, and the right column to write down any flashes of ideas I might have during the case taking, so that I know I've put them down, and that way I don't have to keep thinking about them.
Right.
I don't always fill in the columns. Sometimes I'll have a case where I just have the central column there, but the side columns help that I remember to switch. But the other thing I do as well, like you, I keep a piece of paper by me while I'm taking a case, and there I'll usually do a timeline by hand to try and see where the change nodes were. You know, so the presenting symptoms, something changed 3 months ago. What happened 3 months ago? And then there'll be a change from 4 years before that. What happened 4 years before? So I find those are a bit too hard to do in the computer directly. And I like the visual of a timeline with that information.
Great, great suggestions. Really good. And there are a lot of different homeopaths who teach methods of taking down the case so that it is seen very clearly in terms of the timeline, in terms of acute situations, sensations, different aspects of the case that can be seen sharply when you're visualizing the totality of the case.
I imagine there's also case writing software somewhere around, but I don't know of any. Anyway, let's go on to aphorism 86 because we don't have that much more time. We have around 10 minutes left, I think, Debbie.
Okay.
When the narrator...
Would
you like to read?
Go ahead. Sure, aphorism 86. When the narrators have finished what they would say of their own accord, the physician then reverts to each particular symptom and elicits more precise information respecting it in the following manner. He reads over the symptoms as they were related to him one by one, and about each of them he inquires for further particulars. For example, at what period did this symptom occur? Was it previous to taking the medicine he had hitherto been using while taking the medicine, or only some days after leaving off the medicine? What kind of pain? What sensation exactly was it that occurred on this spot? Where was the precise spot? So we're finding location. Did the pain occur in fits and by itself at various times? Or was it continued without intermission? How long did it last? And what time of the day or night? And in what position of the body was it worse or ceased entirely? What was the exact nature of this or that event or circumstance mentioned, described in plain words? Well, that's a lot of information.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes the plain words are hard to do as well.
Right. I often ask, what do you mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
So if they state something, and I actually will say, I don't understand. What did you mean? Can you rephrase that? And then you can get some new information and new words to further this, the knowledge and the sensations or whatever it is that you need to have to get the case correctly.
Mm-hmm. I think also what happens is sometimes the patient will come to you with medical terminology. They'll come, they'll sit down, they'll say ouch, and they'll say I have sciatica.
Right.
And then we need to discover what this person's sciatica is. What does sciatica mean to you? How does it feel? Where do you feel it? And then sometimes the patient will be resistant. They'll say, what? You don't know what sciatica is?
Mm-hmm.
And you need to hold firm and say, I don't know what your sciatica is. Everyone feels it differently. That was one of the hardest things at the beginning when I'd be taking cases and have aggressive patients who would say, but you know what this is. I have a thyroid problem, right? So what does that mean? What do you feel? Don't you know what thyroid problem is? No, I don't know what your thyroid problem is. Tell me about your problem. Where do you feel it? How do you feel it?
It really makes them go inside and think about themselves, and that's a great part of the case taking. So they become the observer, where they might not have been so self-observant and just given themselves a label, or because it's been so chronic over such a long history of time, they have dismissed it. So now we're asking them to look very closely at something. As a matter of fact, I've had a lot of people who will say, I purposely don't want to talk about it or don't want to rehash or look at this because it's too painful. And that's why they don't want to go over it again.
I've seen that. But what I've also seen is something curious, because just asking the questions, once the patient realizes you're asking for the purpose and you're asking to understand why, how to cure their symptom, it makes the patient feel very cared for. I used to tell my students that nothing makes the patient feel more cared for than someone who actually expresses interest in their hemorrhoids. It's like somebody
right.
cares. When you go to the doctor with hemorrhoids, you'll be referred to someone else who'll do some surgery if possible without touching you. And it's for someone to actually ask, how does it hurt you? Where does it hurt you? Is it a sharp pain? Is it a dull pain? It almost validates the problem, gives validation to the patient. Yes, I have been feeling this pain. It makes a difference. You're interested to know what my pain feels like. And there is something in that that strengthens trust, I find.
Yes, it does, especially if someone has had it, like I said, a long time, and they've already done all of the talking that they're going to do to their family, to their friends, or some people don't want, you know.
Right, they won't talk about it. Lots of things they come, they won't talk about to anybody else.
Well, you know, it depends on that individual, whether they do complain a lot about it and then they feel like they're not heard, or they keep it to themselves. It depends on the type of person they are. And you can get that information from the intake when they tell you, yeah, nobody listens to me, or I've already you know, however they respond to their pain or their situation, that's very important information for the homeopath.
Mm-hmm.
So he's in aphorism 86, he's really giving us specific things to ask and things that we should be on the lookout for.
Well, if we condense it a little, we see from where he says, for example, we see at what period does the symptom occur. So there we have when, but we have when not just 2 weeks ago, but when in relation to taking the medicine, when before or after, when morning or night, when during his workday, when during the week, is there periodicity? There's a lot of things that we can see within that. And here we have what kind of pain, what sensation, how is it felt? Is it sharp? Is it dull? Is it in waves? Is it in bursts? And patients, I find, are fascinated with the questioning. Many of them, they say that it never occurred to them to think about it, but actually they can give the answers.
Yeah. And we want to be clear that he's talking here about homeopathic remedies that have been given. So this is management of the case rather than which medicine, like allopathic medicine, was given. I mean, this is important too, because allopathy will make a change in the person. So if somebody has been taking medicine for GERD, for their heartburn or something, then it may have changed also. So we need to take a look at that.
Debbie, we have around 1 minute left.
Hi, I'm Debbie.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.